Our listeners should please note that this podcast contains a discussion of suicidal thoughts and suicidal ideation. If you are struggling, please reach out to services in your country of origin or to any of the groups listed in the show notes.
I was determined, and I still am, and there's no stopping, because seeing what's going on in the country and people trying to limit gender-affirming care, to me, is devastating. It's devastating, the implications. I mean, I'm in a blue state. It's well-insulated from a lot of that. And we are a sanctuary state for the other states. But it's still disconcerting. It's disconcerting as a veteran to sit here and say, oh, you know what? I signed on the dotted line to protect and defend this country. And now there's probably a whole middle section of the country that I'm not really welcome in.
I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to this 50 Faces Focus series, in which we are celebrating LGBTQ plus professionals in a special series for Pride Month 2023. I'm joined today by Ray Tierney, who is a cybersecurity specialist who was formerly a paramedic. Prior to that, she was a security force security specialist. Welcome, Ray. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start by talking about your background. Where did you grow up and what were your early interests?
I grew up in New England in Windsor, Connecticut. My dad was a New Jersey State Trooper, and I always wanted to be a cop for the longest time. Once I hit high school, I started playing ice hockey. When I went to school for criminal justice, I decided I was going to play ice hockey and party a little too much, and I ended up flunking out of school. Then I felt like I had no choice, and it was really financially imperative to find a way to pay back my student loans. So I joined the Air Force, and I went into Air Force law enforcement, which at that time was divided between law enforcement and security forces. And I chose security forces because it seemed cool. I ended up making a 14-year career of that, and I came out of it knowing a lot of people who were police officers, and I decided during those 14 years, I don't want to be a cop. I felt it was like too much paperwork and writing, and it wasn't the glamorous thing that it seemed. So then I decided to get out of the Air Force, and I had always been into first aid and medical, and I had my emergency medical technician certification. So then I decided, well, maybe I'll go to school to become a paramedic. So I went to school for that, and I did that job for 18 years. And in 2018, I was lifting a very large patient, myself and my partner, and I herniated discs in my neck and had to get some surgeries. After that, that kind of opened up a Pandora's box of injuries. So it was like a cascade effect where the one vertebrae domino was falling, one vertebrae coming out of my neck at a time, and then that getting fused. So at this time, I'm at the point where I'm looking at another surgery within probably next year. So during that period, I felt I needed to find a new job, which wasn't as physically intensive and involving as, you know, lifting heavy things and people. I went and took a course in computer networking, and I found it really interesting. And then I took a course in cybersecurity, and I was hooked. And I really loved every aspect of it. I enjoyed, you know, from investigating and looking for evidence and data, you know, hidden in places, you know, all kind of the cool, sexy things you see in the movies. So I kind of dove into that. And then, believe it or not, some of the aspects of cybersecurity that I really got into were not even the shadowy world of hackers. It's like the compliance component and GRC and different frameworks for compliance and assessing threats to networks and things like that. So I kind of went from wanting to do this cool spy-like job to finding a lot of interest in the, what some people would call just a lot of paperwork aspect of it.
Well, it's not a million miles from your security work, I suppose, in the Air Force in terms of the similar type of need for rigor and structure. It's also interesting, you had some hacking content on LinkedIn. You clearly still have some of the spy work is close to your heart.
Yeah, I think a lot of people going into cybersecurity don't realize how vast of a landscape it is in different specializations. One of the things I'm really into is what they call advanced persistent threats, which is like nation states like North Korea, Russia, doing cyber espionage on other countries. I started doing some writing for online open source intelligence investigatory blog called Over Operator. So you've probably seen on my LinkedIn, there's a lot of posts where I wrote up about different malware, different viruses, different ways that China or North Korea are trying to infiltrate American networks, either for financial gain or for cyber espionage. I take a lot of interest in that. And pretty much everything in cybersecurity I find interesting, but I have my little niche there is the nation state stuff.
Well, as someone who has to go to cyber jail very soon for falling victim to a phishing attempt at my company, I can see how people like yourself on the other side are making it increasingly more difficult to avoid getting caught. So glad to have you at our service. I'd just like to move now to talking about your own story in terms of your transition. Clearly, you've worked in some various, I suppose, traditionally, maybe macho environments. I don't know if you can use that word, but it's the Air Force, maybe the police having overlap with that. What kind of reaction did you receive professionally and personally to that?
Growing up in each of those careers, I think many people that are not fully out or haven't expressed their family or friends their true identity, they do what I call testing the water. And you would make a statement and see how people react to it. And depending on how they react would influence how or whether or not I told them my truth. And I think growing up, I grew up in the 70s, 80s, or my teen years. I graduated high school in 1984. So it was not the environment that we have now. There was no real queer visibility. There was very little. And what it was, and the visibility that was out there was very stereotyped. I think the only drag queens I ever saw were on the Gong Show. You waited for this man dressed like a woman singing horrible falsetto to get gonged off the show. And likewise, I think Three's Company, John Ritter. And it was really a different world. There was nothing accessible to me as someone who started to question who they were and what they were when I was a teenager and going through puberty. What's happening to my body? Why is it not changing the way I think it's supposed to be changing? It's going the opposite gender. So it was difficult. It was really difficult. And my family was very religious. So anything that was not in the norm of acceptability of the Roman Catholic Church was considered deviant. It just filled me with shame and guilt. So going through high school, I went to Catholic schools. So everything about my truth was really shame, guilt. And then I would get those times where I test the water and say, oh man, you know, say to my friends, yeah, you know what? Maybe I would want to look like a really hot looking girl. And they'd give me a look and I'd be like, oh my God, I'm just kidding. You know, I did not mean, I just want to see what you guys, how you reacted. It puts you in a situation when you are transgender and you're in an environment like that, where you have that shame, you have that guilt, and you start to internalize transphobia against yourself because you realize the implications of if anyone finds out, if you come out, this will happen. I will lose my family. My family will cast me out. My friends will not talk to me. My employment role may suffer. One of the big things that was really devastating to me was when I believe I was 21, 22, and I tested for Connecticut State Police. I was required to take a polygraph test. And for that polygraph test, they give you a book. The book is filled with all sorts of intrusive questions, and you answer them. And then when you're connected to the machine, they say, did you withhold any information about what you were asked in that book? And I'm like the worst, most horrible, guilty conscience. So I could have probably told everything 100% truth and still would have showed that I lied. I divulged everything. They wanted to know, have you ever dressed like a woman? Have you ever had the desire to be the opposite sex? What is your sexual orientation? A lot of these questions. And then I answer them honestly, and I came out of there just devastated. And knowing that who I was likely to make me not get that job. And that day, I actually considered committing suicide after that experience. And it was really devastating. But I regrouped and went back to my Air Force job. It was difficult because the Air Force job, while it was security forces, it was everyone there thought they were the toughest person on the Air Force base. It was a very macho, misogynistic environment. And likewise, when I was a paramedic, it was kind of the same thing. Everyone had a rough edge to them. Even some of the women, a lot of the people working there wanted to eventually be police officers. So they always had this hard edge. I kind of went through all that time just knowing that I didn't fit in. The true me didn't fit in. Throughout my life, I had anxiety, depression, a lot of trauma, relationship trauma with my family. Because at one point, I did in 1999, when I was getting out of the Air Force, I went to a gender clinic. I finally found one, went to the gender clinic. They assessed me. I spent like $6,000 of my own money to get these assessments because I didn't want insurance or the Air Force finding out. And I was approved to go on hormones. When I came out to my family and they found out, the pressure that was put on me was immense. And probably about 6 months later, I detransitioned. I just stopped taking the hormones, but I had been going through electrolysis and procedures for hair removal. I had a rhinoplasty. I had a lip implant. I was starting to have procedures done, and it was the pressure from my family and I think the external pressure from society that made me stop. I detransitioned. I ended up getting married and having three kids. The whole time, knowing in the back of my mind that it was still there and it was eating at me and eating at me. And I had horrible coping mechanisms. I resorted to self-inflicted cutting behavior. And I had probably another three suicide attempts. One of them was pretty serious. I was in the hospital for a week. But then around 2019, I got to the point where I felt that either I had to fully go on and transition or I was going to end up ending things. That's when I decided to fully go ahead and transition. At that point, I was determined, and I still am, and there's no stopping because seeing what's going on in the country and people trying to limit gender-affirming care, to me, is devastating. It's devastating, the implications. I mean, I'm in a blue state. It's well-insulated from a lot of that. And we are a sanctuary state for the other states. But it's still disconcerting. It's disconcerting as a veteran to sit here and say, oh, you know what? I signed on the dotted line to protect and defend this country. And now there's probably a whole middle section of the country that I'm not really welcome in. even now, looking for jobs. Do I want to take a job that's in Florida? Do I want to take a job that even a remote job? Because if the company is based in Florida and Florida law prohibits Florida businesses from covering hormone therapy for transgender adults or kids, would I be losing that ability? One vial of estrogen lasts me a couple of months, but if you pay out of pocket, it's probably about $300. And that's just one medication alone. Even looking at remote jobs where they say, oh, hey, are you able to travel? It's like, okay, well, now I have to kind of say, yeah, I'm able to travel. But then in the back of my mind, knowing that, yeah, but if you have your conference or training or something and send me to Florida, I don't know where I'm going to go to the bathroom because according to them, I need to go in the men's room or face criminal charges. It's crazy. It just really is.
I'll just jump in there, Ray, because first of all, thank you for sharing such a vulnerable, open story in such an honest fashion. I think that is tremendously brave of you, but also tremendously helpful to others going through a similar thing and similar emotions. A few things you said should have just trigger some moments for me where I thought you mentioned that internalized transphobia. And you know, I speak with people of any number of underrepresented groups, and it strikes me that perhaps in this Pride series, that's maybe one of the few areas where we have an internalized phobia against who we are. It's unlike in the case of gender or ethnicity, I'm not sure that one would want to be against oneself. That's a very unique condition. Maybe not completely unique, but it's certainly, it is particularly, I think, also just to think about the professions you've worked in as perhaps the absolute pinnacle of, as was heteronormative and behavior that is very much traditional. The other thing I thought of is in the 80s, when you were growing up, coming out of high school with the AIDS epidemic, whether that sort of changed the perception of the gay communities and whether that was a cloud that maybe hindered progress or in some way maybe accelerated. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, the notion of the shame and guilt, and add upon that the layer of the belief system that I grew up with. I mean, I still believe in Christianity, but I don't believe in that form of Christianity, which I think is a total perversion of the message of Christ. But you had that shame and guilt. It seems kind of crazy, but I felt that if I transitioned, if I became a woman, if I did what I felt was my true self, because of the shame and guilt, I would be punished by God, by the higher power, and I would end up dying of AIDS. I felt that if I had, because I was unsure of my sexuality at that time, that if I experimented with a man or experimented, I don't even know, it almost seems inconceivable to believe that. If I was cross-dressed or I was transitioned and I had sex with a man, I would get AIDS. It was like almost a certainty. God's going to punish me. If you took the message of the Westboro Baptist Church toward LGBTQ people, that's what was in my brain pretty much.
There was a lot of rhetoric around that time. We talked a bit about inclusion in your professions and how that's evolved and how that's not necessarily uniform across the country in the US today. That said, though, have you found, say, within the field of cybersecurity, because you can, you know, the remote working is more flexible, have you found that there has been any improvement? I know we're talking about some things going backwards. What would you say? Would you say is the sum total of the progress or backsteps that are occurring?
I see a lot of, I think this month and this Pride was, it was kind of a wake up to people. And I say that in the sense of people that felt that, oh, hey, Target's cool with us being queer. And, you know, look at all the queer stuff they have in their store. Well, what's the strength of that relationship? Because it turned out that Target, Budweiser, a lot of these companies that want to show this, and they want to fly the rainbow flag high, but then when they get backlash, they're backing down and they're not standing by us like a true ally. And I think the thing that I compare that to in my mind is after the Parkland shootings in Florida, and you had the high school kids, you know, David Hogg and all his peers who survived that shooting, and they were very active in the movement against having assault weapons. Shortly after that, the CEO of Dick's Sporting Goods made a unilateral decision to stop selling AR-15s in his stores. And if you ever have gone into a Dick's Sporting Goods, you know, at least half of their store is catered to outdoors, guns, hunting, fishing, fishing apparel, all of that. And to me, the fact that he chose to do that, knowing that the gun lobby, the pro-gun people were going to just go crazy, was an incredibly brave decision. That was truly someone who was determined to stand up for that cause. So when I see companies like Target pulling displays and moving things to the back of the store, and likewise, to me, it's cowardice. I find that it's not being a true ally.
I think what you mentioned is really interesting. I think this is very parallel to the backlash against ESG and diversity, because the S part, and you know, we've moved from greenwashing, making things look more green or more ESG compliant, to green hushing. And I think the same thing is going to happen with some of these diversity initiatives. But really, the real answer we all know with ESG is just take the label away. And I wonder with some of the diversity initiatives and some of the gender inclusive bathrooms, if we just take some labels away, will it take the heat out of the discussion?
Yeah, it's frustrating because at one point during my transition, the thing that I felt saved me was if I had to go to the bathroom, I always knew that I could go to a Starbucks because their bathrooms are just gender neutral. There's no men's room, no women's room. It's not like Target where it's like, obviously there's, you know, 30 feet of wall between the two well-marked male, female, men's room, women's room. And that's the thing. It's frustrating because in some ways, I think the LGBTQ community, I mean, there's some aspects of having a label that I feel pigeonholes you. And honestly, I felt at one point, you know, a friend and I were having a discussion and she said to me, well, are you non-binary or, and I'm like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, I'm transgender, I'm male to female transgender. And she was like, no, she's like, she was explaining to me gender and sexuality. And I was like, well, yeah, I understand that. And it made me think about how in the past, a transgender individual was someone that was a male becoming female or a female becoming a male. It was still a binary. It was still a one or a zero. There was no in between. Then you had the terms gender fluid. But now you have non-binary. And it's, I don't know, there's so many labels. And while I think among the community now, she got me to the point where I was like, okay, you know what? I think I am non-binary. I am trans femme non-binary. It's like a prescription. I've got my regular name and I've got the generic, you know, but I think there's a duality to everything. Just like the idea of having non-gendered bathrooms and the idea of deciding, well, this is how I identify. And sometimes you're at that point where you really don't know, but then you're going to pigeonhole yourself into a box of, okay, well, I'm non-binary, but I'm female. And I think you see that now with a lot of celebrities where finally they, I think some of them unfortunately are just pushed to the brink of, oh my God, just quit following me and seeing what nightclubs I go to try telling everyone I'm gay. Okay. I'm non-binary. You know, it's like, and then 3 months later, that same celebrity says, oh, well, they don't think they're binary. They think they're lesbian. It's like, I get frustrated because that's one of the aspects of why is everybody so intrusive? Why does everyone want to know if Harry Styles is bisexual? Who cares whether he is or he isn't? That's his private life, you know?
It's an excellent point. And I think I've discussed on this podcast, sometimes it's actually the haters that drive engagement when it is social media engagement you want.
Yeah.
It's not always the kind you want, but it's ironically, they actually boost your visibility by being the haters that they are. So it's a strange, warped way it works. I just wanted to go back to some final questions. Just we've packed a ton of discussions and topics in here. And I'd love to ask just now, when you look back at the life you've lived to date and the journey you've been on, were there any pieces of advice you received or any creed or motto that you have derived that you can share with us here?
I think that my frustration with what is going on in America, and especially with the youth and all these states that are very quick to label parents as abusive or abusers because they are getting appropriate gender-affirming care for their children, it blows my mind, because my feeling is that when I look at YouTube or TikTok or something, I see some of these just beautiful young, either starting transition, mid-transition, or fully transitioned people that are younger than me. And it makes me have some regret that I didn't grow up in this generation to have the services available, to have accessibility of those services. And I'm not just talking the hormones and everything, but I'm talking, you know, to have the services of people to help these kids sort out who they are and find what their identity is before they take a single pill is just imperative. And it makes the impact of the hateful laws even more profound on my psyche, knowing that, and knowing that the younger that you do this, I'm not going to say the more successful, but because everyone has their own gauge of where they want to be and how bad their dysphoria is, et cetera. But sometimes I say, I wish I had a time machine, because I would go back in time with my box of estrogen and I would inject the crap out of myself when I was 11 or 12 years old, because growing up and hiding yourself and the shame and the guilt and everything is just, it's why the suicide rate is so high. It's why the mental health issues are there. I have a child who is on the autism spectrum. He has Asperger's syndrome. To me, it's no different than people that are on the neurodivergent scale, especially Tony Atwood, who's like one of the foremost authorities on Asperger's. He says that people with Asperger's, they aren't the problem the way society treats them and the way they're received is the problem, because they are different, because they do things different, because they have this different affect. I think that's very similar to some of the trans community. Part of where I'm at is, if you're part of this community, and there are so many resources now for young people, that you've got Trevor Project, you've got suicide hotlines, you've got mental health access, you've got clinic access, even pediatricians. But the more they try to make this into this tug of war politically, the more danger comes into the picture, because the medical industry isn't out there looking at your child as a way to profiteer and try to brainwash them into thinking they're transgender so they can have them buy hormones for the rest of their life. But I mean, the conspiracy theories are out there. It's really dangerous. And I think the parents who are willing to help their kids through their gender confusion or gender identity issues don't go into any of this lightly. A lot of them go through a very difficult time, just as my spouse has gone through. But there are some that react negatively, and there's some families who react negatively. We'll cast their kids out on the street if they find out that they're queer. That's where we have to have the safety nets out there for these kids and adults who are homeless or jobless because they live in a state or a community where no one wants to hire them because they're transgender or queer. So I guess my words would be of encouragement to access what is out there and make an attempt to live your truth, because I know now, and I've only been transitioned 3 years now, that I don't know what I would do if everything was cut off tomorrow. If my access to hormones, my access to my gender affirming care was cut off, I honestly don't know that I would want to continue.
Ray, I think that call to action is a beautiful place to end this podcast. You are a gift to us. We're so glad you are here and advocating and showing your resilient self and living your truth. I want to thank you for sharing your story with us. And as I said, I couldn't think of a better way to round out our Pride series for 2023.
Thank you very much for having me. I just want to say that I really love our community and everyone that's in it. I hope for the best. I hope that smarter people prevail in a lot of these red states. If you're in one of those red states and are trying to get out and you visit Connecticut as a sanctuary state, look me up.
Well, and we will put links to all of those organizations you mentioned, like the Trevor Project, etc., in the show notes. I'm Ethan Devitt. Thank you for listening to our 50 Faces Focus series. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear from more inspiring professionals and their stories, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.